All right, welcome back to Heino's Home Show. We are so glad you're with us yet again. Had another fine week, and it's nice to be here. Got Encyclopedia Steve here with us today. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing good, Heino. Good week, as always.
Good week, as always, over at Accurate Mortgage, who is our main sponsor. If you are looking to buy a house or refinance a house, go check them out at AccurateMTG.com, and they'll get you closed and back to life. We got some great guests in the studio here today. We've got brothers, actually. We got Jeff and Clay Ezell of the Compost Company, and they're going to kind of enlighten us what that means. Because I honestly didn't know a whole lot about this before we started putting this show together, and it's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it is real interesting. And I didn't know a lot either.
And I didn't know all the stuff you could do with it and why it's important, and now I'm going to have to go do it. So Jeff and Clay Ezell, they're co-owners, as I mentioned, of the Compost Company. They're in Ashland City, and they're a Tennessee-based company that's been dedicated to reducing waste and enriching soil since 2012. So they've been at it a while. They both have a long list of credentials and accolades relating to ecological and environmentally friendly causes, including the fact that Jeff previously served as the recycling coordinator of Metro Nashville Public Works and is currently VP of the Tennessee Recycling Coalition. And Clay is the current president of the Tennessee Composting Council. So gentlemen, welcome to Heino's Home Show.
Thank you very much for having us.
Indeed. Glad to be here.
Nice. So I guess we could just start with the very basics. What the heck is composting, and why do we need it?
Composting, at its most basic, is mimicking what happens in nature. When an apple falls off a tree and goes uneaten,
yeah,
it will return to the soil and in ways that have been going on since time began. And it's something that has been practiced in agriculture for thousands of years, but was sort of started to get forgotten when we started to modernize. And so what we do is we try to bring that idea to waste management writ large. Organic material, and by organic I mean little organic, not certified organic, anything that was once alive can be composted, which is an environmentally sustainable alternative to landfilling. Most of our trash, as we all know, ends up in a great big pile and gets covered up every day and sort of swept under the rug, if you will.
Yeah,
And organic waste is the single largest stream of that. It's food waste, lawn and garden waste, wood, paper, lumber, things like that. And so what we do is we divert it from landfilling and we turn it into something that can be beneficially reused.
Well, how much, just in general, if you know, how much waste does, let's say, Nashville generate in a year?
Nashville generates around 1.2 million tons of waste a year, and that's just from Davidson County alone.
1.2 million tons.
Tons.
With a T.
With a T. 2,000 pounds each.
So I'm guessing that's a lot.
Yeah. I feel like I'm going to be saying wow a lot during this show.
Yeah. Man, oh man. And in how much of that is compostable? You know, because obviously plastic bags and plastic bottles, that goes somewhere else, hopefully to recycling.
Certainly. The estimates range from between 25% and 35% of
that
waste.
So that's a big chunk.
It is the single largest stream of stuff that goes into a landfill every day.
Man, oh man. So as far as the average homeowner, why should we be interested in composting just at the home level? I mean, what would it do for me, let's say, if I started to do this? Because actually, after studying about it here for the last few days, it does sound like something that I might want to go ahead and start doing.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I think it's a great
idea.
I know.
So, but for people who don't know, why would I be interested in taking part in that?
Well, there's the environmental benefit of keeping that material out of a landfill.
Sure.
At the home level, it usually on a per pound basis, it is probably the majority of what most people are throwing away. The average homeowner wastes roughly 25% of the food that they buy every single year.
You know, that is true, especially when you got kids. You know, they eat tiny little bit of it, and I don't want it anymore.
Want to encourage them to eat the asparagus and the broccoli, but sometimes they don't always follow suit.
I know. Brussels sprouts. I love Brussels sprouts. What's wrong with Brussels sprouts?
Actually, as a kid, I used to hate Brussels sprouts, and now as an adult, I love them. I think they're great.
Yeah. So I could see how that would happen. I was actually surprised that coffee grounds is compostable. Why? You would think that all the acid and stuff in those that wouldn't be a good thing, but
they're very nitrogen rich, and so that's why composters like us love them. And we produce.
And it is a bean, actually, right? So it's just because it's ground up into a powder. It doesn't look like a bean anymore, but it is actually an organic thing.
Absolutely. And a lot of what we get looks a lot different than it did in its sort of natural state. We get a lot of, you know, food scraps that are either the leavings or the peels or the uneaten portion of things. But we also get a lot of things like compostable serviceware that is a, you know, a cup or a fork or a knife that is made out of compostable,
like quote, paper.
Plastic. But paper is absolutely compostable. I mean, we mean it. When we say anything that was once alive can be processed and composted.
All right. So other than getting stuff out of the landfill, why else might a homeowner be interested in taking on the composting project?
Well, what is left over is some of the most beneficial material from a perspective of soil health that you can find.
Oh, for gardening and that kind of thing?
Absolutely. Lawn care, you know, anything that you want to apply it to. I mean, it's really taking an approach at soil health rather than just spraying something on there that's temporarily beneficial.
So you maybe save some money on all the chemicals that you might buy.
Right, absolutely. And I mean, one of the most overlooked things about lawn care is that the easiest way, the best way to prevent weeds in your lawn is to have healthy grass. When we mow the grass, a lot of times people rake up that thatch or it's sucked up by a lawnmower. And if you don't return the organic materials back into the soil, then one of the four main constituents of the soil you're just taking away every year. And eventually, you know, we end up with soils traditionally in Middle Tennessee that are really thick, clay-heavy soils that don't retain moisture very well.
Okay.
They don't allow rainwater into the soil very well. And
so the soil doesn't necessarily start out really clay-like. It just becomes that way over time because there's no composting going on?
Well, especially around here, it's because of the limestone bedrock that we have sort of breaks down and becomes those itty-bitty little particles that are in the soil. So it's important to, like, soils around here are usually about 1% organic matter, and your agricultural extension agents would want it to be around 3-5%. So composting is just an easy way to return those organic materials back into the soil.
So then leaving the leaves on the lawn and letting them decompose is a form of composting? Although that probably can hurt your lawn too, right?
If you wanted to leave the leaves on the lawn, I would want you to mulch those up before you did that.
Okay.
Grass clippings, which some people refer to as grass cycling, is another way to help make sure that those organic materials don't leave your soil.
So if you were going to do that, would you just use like a lawnmower that doesn't have a bagger on it and just kind of let them spray? Or do you put them into a bagger and then try and spread it out throughout the lawn?
Correct. I mean, if you were going to practice grass cycling, you would just mow the lawn and leave the clippings.
Okay.
Just let it shoot out the side. Which took me a while to get used to, because where I came from in California, we always bagged everything up, you know? And I did that for the longest time here, and I noticed none of my neighbors were doing it. And I was like, okay, well, I'll try that, you know? And it's actually a lot less work, because you don't...
Yeah. Well, it's true. I mean, I grew up mowing our lawn in New York, and, you know, the clippings always seemed like they would, like, bunch together, I guess. Maybe they were always wet when I was mowing the lawn, because it rains a lot up there, but... you know, it would cause little areas of the grass to die. But I guess maybe that was just poor lawn mowing. I mean, I was only 12 or 13 when I was doing this.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, not super experienced in how that works. So.
Well, and if they do get real clumped up, they're going to, you know, cover up the existing grass.
Right.
And, you know, they won't be able to get the sunshine that they need to thrive. If you can either rake out those grass clippings and make them even, or if you collect those, I mean, it's an excellent nitrogen source for your home compost pile.
Okay. So you mentioned that composting obviously has been around for thousands of years, especially because it just happens in nature. But how long has it been, like, you know, a thing as far as something that people do consciously in the U.S.?
In the U.S., we're a little late to the party.
Are we really?
There's other regions of the world. You know, in Japan, they have really great composting practices. In Europe, too. And a lot of that was driven both by just, you know, the ethos of this is the right thing to do, but also by space constraints. You know, it's really hard to find a place to dig a big landfill in continental Europe right now. And so, say in Germany and France,
Japan's a relatively small island, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so you kind of, you know, they were doing that kind of thing, but then they sort of ran out of room, you know, sweeping it under the rug was full. And so they had to come up with better ways to do it. And so they're quite a ways ahead of us on those kinds of practices.
So what would you say, the last like 20, 30 years here in the U.S., or maybe goes back a little farther than that?
That's about right. You know, and along sort of the coastal areas out west, they're well ahead of us. And, you know, California, Oregon, Washington are really at the forefront. But it's starting to work its way into the Northeast, again, partly because of space constraints. Mm-hmm. You can't find a place to dig a landfill in New England, and so around New York City. So they're really starting to adopt a lot of these practices, and it's really starting to percolate here in the Southeast. That's why we're here.
Nice. Well, when did you guys start as a company then here? How did you get involved in this industry?
Let's see. I mean, it took place. The compost company was founded by our partner, Edward Wansing, in late 2011, and really got going in 2012. Jeffrey and I, as part of some thinking that he was doing while he was working with the city of Nashville, had decided that we were going to pursue something in composting. And then we came across our partner, Ed, and we partnered up in 2015. And we've really been able to grow the company since then.
Nice. So does that happen a lot on the commercial level as well as the residential level as far as composting goes?
We primarily focus on, at least our collection efforts are on the commercial side. So we go to restaurants, grocery stores, hospitals, hotels to...
Yeah, they're going to have a lot of food waste, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The hospitality industry, that can usually be somewhere in the 60 to 70% of what they're throwing away every day. We generate tons of it on that front. And so that's where we focus our collection efforts. We also work with some groups that do residential collection services from people who want to see their waste go to a better use.
Yeah.
Diverted from landfilling at least. And a partner of ours, Compost Nashville, will collect that from your home. And then we process all that material, and then some of our compost gets returned.
Yeah. Well, listen, we need to take a quick break, but let's touch on that when we come back. We're going to talk about composting at home and what that all entails. So you come on back to Hino's Home Show. All right. Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. We're so glad you came back with us. We are talking composting this week. But I should say we are brought to you by the folks over at Accurate Mortgage Group. If you're looking to buy a house or refinance, give them a shout at accuratemtg.com or hinoshomeshow.com. You can find them there as well. They'll get you closed and back to life. We are here with Jeff and Clay Ezell of the Compost Company, and we're talking composting. And we kind of touched on in the last segment a little bit about the corporate side of things, but what if people want to do it at home? We're interested in composting on the residential side of things, which based on some of the stuff we've talked about recently, Steve, growing your own stuff, you know, and everything that happened recently, a lot of people were like, crap, there's nothing at the grocery store. I should grow my own stuff.
Yeah.
And this is a great way to like make that happen faster.
Yeah, it really would. And, you know, if you go back and listen to some of the shows that we've had talking about different things, you can really see how a lot of this stuff really all fits together.
Yeah, absolutely. So Jeff, how hard is it to do composting at home? What do you need to do to get started with that?
Well, it's not a huge chore. You can put very little effort into it. It will only just need to be directly related to your level of patience for coming up with a good finished compost.
Okay.
So if you have a home compost pile, you do want to make sure that you get a good mix of feedstocks or ingredients that you put into your compost pile. But it's not the sort of thing that you want to be out there turning your compost pile every single day. Once a month is better than never. Once a week is better than once a month. But you really don't even want to turn your compost pile more than once every 4 days. As long as your compost pile isn't a really long way away from your kitchen and it's something that you're willing to divert a certain amount or all of your food scraps from the kitchen to your compost pile.
Okay. Well, you mentioned not being a long way from the kitchen. Can it be done indoors?
It can be done indoors if you want to get into
garage, maybe
like vermicomposting and get some worms involved. There are a number of folks who do that. There are a number of products out there on the line that can help you do that. Or there are also resources on the Metro Nashville Public Works website that can help you get a worm composting situation going.
And if you're into fishing, that you kind of kill two birds with one stone.
Absolutely. It's the red wigglers are one of the most popular composting worms.
Wow. So what do the worms have to do with it? I mean, obviously worms are outside. So is it worms just in your area that are going to work with an outdoor compost, whereas inside you have to bring in your own worms?
If you were going to start a worm composting bin that you would keep either in your garage or under your sink or something like that, then you would want to, you know, purchase 1,000 or so worms from a worm farm. And then you maintain it's almost like an ant farm where they're in a bin, you put the food waste in there, bacteria begins to break down the food waste, which is the bacteria is really what it is that the worms are after when they're eating
yeah.
the food waste.
Now, you mentioned also having like a good mix of different things. Is there like a certain percentage of different materials that you want to have in there?
So really, if you're starting a home compost pile, every time you go out to that pile and you take your banana peels and, you know, other sorts of fruits and vegetable waste, you would just like to be able to cover that up with some sort of what we refer to as a brown material, an old, dried up, dead plant material that can be shredded dried leaves that you collected in the fall. It can be shredded corrugated cardboard or something like that. You just want to remember, if you're not using something that you collected from the yard, then you want to be able to add the beneficial microbes that are really doing all of that decomposition for you. And it's super easy. Just throw a handful of soil in your compost pile and it'll help add all the beneficial microbes you need to help keep that stuff breaking down.
How big of a yard do you need? I mean, how big is this whole operation?
Most people's compost piles, and if you look at a lot of the compost bins that are on the market, if you were going to actually purchase something that was ready to go, most of them are not any larger than, say, a 50-gallon trash can. A lot of people will build their own compost bin out of pallets, and you can just make a three-sided compost bin
out of something like that. Like you see at mulch places.
Like you see at mulch places, or you can make it out of chicken wire or something like that. You really just
want to be able to keep all the stuff. Yeah, my HOA would love that.
yeah. See, the problem with a lot of people will have open compost piles where you just kind of take your stuff out there, throw it on the pile, and walk away. The only problem with an open pile is that it continues to typically grow.
Yeah.
And it just gets sort of wider and wider and wider, and it gets a lot harder to manage and stir if you do want to go out there and, you know, let the compost pile breathe a little
bit. Pretty soon you got an acre-sized...
Right. You're in the neighbor's yard, too.
Yeah. It's a whole big old mess. So then what exactly do you put in it? You mentioned food scraps like banana peels, fruit clippings, I guess, for lack of a better word, grass clippings. What else can you put in it?
When home composting, I would first off suggest avoiding any sort of animal proteins. You wouldn't want to use like meat, fat, bones, dairy, things like that, just because it might help attract certain rodents and other sorts
of things to a compost
pile, especially if it's a really small compost pile that's not going to get really, really hot. But there are some other sorts of items that you'll find around the home which are perfectly fine to add to your compost pile. Dryer lint, as we talked about, corrugated cardboard, things like that.
You mentioned pet hair earlier. That one surprised me. You can put pet hair in there?
Certainly. You know, it's coming off of a living thing, and so it will break down.
Wow. How about like human hair?
Sure.
Because there's a ton of that in the shower after my wife's done. Like, between that and the pet hair, you know, we can...
Yeah, your wife's not going to like that. But
that's okay. She doesn't listen to this show. I mean, come on.
I know, right?
But she gets enough of me at home.
Well, you know, with everybody being at home, we actually bought a set of clippers and my wife cuts my hair. So we actually have a lot of hair scraps from that.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So do you guys ever go down to like the Great Clips and pick up all the extra hair there? Or
we've had people bring them to us. We've got some drop-off places situated around the city for Davidson County residents who maybe don't want to maintain their own pile. They can actually bring their food scraps to some bins for free drop-off at convenience centers. And we have occasionally pulled open a great big bag of hair that I think probably came from a salon. But currently we don't have any pickup clients on
All right. Now, you mentioned something earlier that really made me think, because you said that it gets hot. How does a compost pile get hot? What makes that happen, and how hot does it get?
In our facility, our piles can get into the, you know, 160, 170, 180 degree.
Really?
On the inside. And that's really...
Are you heating it in like in a heater, or what are you doing?
All of the microbes that are really doing the heavy lifting of decomposition. Because really what we're doing is just controlling, speeding up decomposition. Okay. And so if we make the conditions right for all of the microbes that are in that pile, they're actually generating the heat. And that's one of the ways that we, when we're monitoring how those piles are doing, we take their temperature a lot.
Okay. So it's a chemical reaction that creates the heat.
They are actually generating that heat as a living thing. And so if the temperature's in the right range, we know that it's going well. There are sort of ideal ranges for all this to happen. And
the home side, how do you monitor that?
You get yourself about a 3-foot thermometer and you go out and, you know, when it's time to go turn it, give it a shot with the thermometer and see how it's doing. And
so 3 foot so indicator. That it can go down deep into the pile.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing they make special thermometers for this.
They do, but you could even get by with a 12-inch meat thermometer if you've got a small pile. You just want to dig down in there and do it. You really don't need that much special equipment. You can be as sophisticated about it or as you can do it as primitively as you want to. It really, you just find a system that works for you.
Okay, so then if it's not hot enough, what do you do?
Most times in a home composting situation, it's not going to make that big of a difference on a really small scale for someone's yard, lawn, garden, something like that, unless a compost pile is pretty big. And by pretty big, I mean a cubic yard or so. You're not going to see most of the year really, really high temperatures. And so one of the things that I would suggest a homeowner look out for, or at least be aware of, is if they're going to make compost from their kitchen scraps, and that compost pile doesn't get above 131 degrees Fahrenheit, then they're going to see an uptick in volunteer vegetables in their garden. Because when they return the compost, the seeds that were in the compost pile from those fruits and vegetables will then
start to grow.
They'll make it through the composting process and they'll start to grow.
Okay. But if it's hot enough, they won't grow.
If it's hot enough, if it stays above that temperature threshold at 131 degrees, mm-hmm. then those seeds will be broken down.
Okay.
That and any worrisome sort of, pathogens and things that, that's a threshold that we have to meet in our process to make sure that, nothing like salmonella or E. coli is making it through the process. So we have to maintain, a nice heat, which again is just a natural byproduct if we're doing it correctly, but maintaining those makes sure that when the finished compost is actually, safe to use.
Yeah. Gotcha. Well, yeah, you said 131 degrees, and the first thing I thought of was cooking food. I feel like that's a threshold that you want to maintain a food temperature over that amount so that there's no
germs.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. That's obviously not my field of expertise, but
yeah, clearly your wife is the one in the medical field, not you.
She is. Yeah. Well, you mentioned earlier, a lot of this takes patience, right? So how long from starting a compost pile to getting to a point where you've got something that you can use to either fertilize your lawn or whatever else you may do with it?
So for us, we're at about 5 months from the time organic materials come in to the time that they are usually ready to go out the door as a finished product. At the home level, it does require some patience. It's going to be probably at least 6 months from the time that you build your compost pile to the size that, the capacity of either the bin that you have made or however big you want that pile to be. I would expect for it to take at least 6 months for that stuff to be really mature. Now, that said, there are gardeners out there who will use coffee grounds or just bury a banana peel in their garden.
Okay.
Interesting.
One of the things that I'd probably be worried about would be it smelling like rotting garbage. Is that a problem? And how do you deal with it if that starts to happen?
If you get your ratios right, you're really not going to generate, an offensive odor, especially if you're keeping that pile turned and keeping it warm and breaking down. Odor is one of the things that we look out for the most at our facility, and that's usually an indication that we're doing something incorrectly.
Okay.
Because, we have the advantage of doing it at very large scale, and so when we, make a pile that is 13 feet tall and, 200 feet long, it gets cooking really, really quickly. And so we're getting up to those temperatures and it eliminates a lot of that odor. It's when you're keeping it a little cooler that it has the potential to start to get noticeable.
Good. Yeah, that would probably generate some complaints to the HOA.
Right.
Yeah. Also, in addition to the chicken wire and pallets.
At the home level, if you do build a compost pile and you do notice some odors like that, that's usually a pretty easy problem to fix. If you just add some more of those brown materials that we talked about, dried leaves, shredded cardboard, or newspaper, it's usually just because the pile is either way too wet or it's not getting enough air to the middle of the pile.
All right. Well, listen, we need to take another quick break, but we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit about the actual steps that we need to do all this stuff. So you come on back to Hinos Home Show. All right, welcome back to Hino's Home Show. We are brought to you by the fine folks at Accurate Mortgage Group. If you're looking to buy a house or refinance a house, give them a shout at accuratemtg.com and they'll get you closed and back to life. We are talking composting with Jeff and Clay Ezell of The Compost Company. And of course, joined as always by Encyclopedia Steve over here, who just knows a little bit about everything. So it's kind of amazing how that happens. How did you get so smart, Steve?
You know, I don't have a good answer for that.
Wow, I stumped him. I stumped him finally.
You did.
That's amazing.
You know, have you ever heard the saying, jack of all trades, master of none?
Yes.
The only thing I have mastered is mortgages. That's it.
Okay. All right. I like that. I like that. So guys, Jeff and Clay are here with us. So let's say the actual steps that you want to start, you want to do this at home. You got to pick a spot. We talked about that a little bit. You want to figure out what you're going to put it in. Are there some commercial things that you can buy just ready-made if you don't want to build something to do your composting?
Absolutely. There are so many different ways you can do it. You can build it your own. You can buy something that can help you in an enclosed container or a tumbler.
Like a cement mixer kind of thing where it just spins? Or
That's actually a pretty close description of what it is. The Metro Public Works has a variety of things that you can buy at cost. It's a really cool program that Metro does.
Really?
But they've got sort of a menu of different versions. You can have the one where it produces compost that you can use in your garden, or just the one that makes your organic material go away if all you want to do is divert it from landfilling. So there's lots of different options there, and I would encourage anybody to really explore those, because
that's interesting. What is that? Why is that different to make it go away? What does it do?
That's the sort of the green cone. It returns it to the soil. It's basically something that you can put in an unobtrusive part of your yard, and you open up the top, dump it in there, and you never think about it again. Nature kind of, you know, the critters down in the soil will get a hold of that and sort of make it disappear.
Wow. Interesting.
It doesn't leave you with anything at the end of the day, but to use if you want it for gardening purposes.
But if you're going to go through the trouble, you might as well have some good soil left over to be able to use for planting things, right?
I mean, yeah. You know, I think one of the interesting things that we talked about too, and we've talked about some misconceptions, and I'm curious about some other ones that may be out there, but it sounds like this isn't just a purely altruistic. I mean, certainly there is an altruistic piece to it. We want to take care of the environment. But in the same token, it also helps from a land management standpoint, like you've mentioned, building landfills and stuff like that. And so I think that's really one of the cool things about composting that I never realized until we looked into. And I think maybe is something that, you know, people listening would appreciate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So one of the things you mentioned earlier, stuff that you just put in from your garden and stuff, do you have to buy any additives? Are there, because I know that there's some pellets you can buy. Do you really need to do all that?
I think the short answer is no. You don't really need a lot of those things. There's all sorts of different things that are available for the homeowners and, you know, at the commercial level that we've determined don't really help it as long as you're mixing everything correctly.
Okay. So the chemical reaction that just naturally happens with the right mixture of stuff that you put in is good enough on its own. You don't need to, put, compost helper in there or something like that.
No. It's almost kind of like a starter log for a fire.
Yeah, something like that, maybe.
Yeah.
I would only recommend if your brown material that you're using as the ingredient for your compost pile, I would just, once again, throw in some handfuls of soil every time you go out there and add those materials, because otherwise it's going to be harder for your compost pile to already go ahead and have the microbes that it needs to speed that up.
Can you just get a small bag of just like potting soil, that kind of thing, to throw in there? Is that what you do?
If you have any grass in your yard, I would just dig up a handful of that. There are billions of microbes in every tablespoonful of soil that is already in your yard.
Okay, so when you say dig up some, you just mean like a little table. I'm picturing big craters in my front lawn because I'm digging up the handful. Front lawn to put it in the compost pile.
It's like just a handful or two every now and then, and those microbes will multiply rapidly.
Okay. All right. So then how do you know when it's time to turn it? You said you don't have to do it that often, but when it is time to do it, how do you know when it's time?
The best thing that you can do for a compost pile is turn it every 4 days.
Oh, that often. Okay.
But like I said, not everybody's going to be quite so dedicated. Once a week is better than once a month. Once a month is better than once a year. The materials will break down. It's just a matter of how much do you want to manage their decomposition? And the more tightly you manage it, the faster it will happen. There's certainly no requirement, unless, of course, you do run into some sort of a problem. If you get a big rain and the pile's super wet, or if it gets smelly, that would definitely be a time that you would want to turn the pile just to sort of mitigate that problem.
Okay. Okay. So it does have to stay still for a while, right? You mentioned the tumbler type of unit that you could buy. You don't want that constantly turning and constantly moving like a cement truck would be.
What were you trying to achieve with the manipulation of, or the turning, is to keep the material from, you know, clumping up and so that it can really breathe. Okay. Moisture levels.
So it needs air.
Absolutely. It's critical. That and moisture are the two things that we pay the most attention to. And so that's what you're achieving, is just getting allowing those things to breathe in that environment.
So you mentioned rain. What other ways does weather affect what you're doing? You know, like, is it difficult to compost in the wintertime versus the summer? Like, is there a difference in how you would approach composting during different seasons?
That is one of the challenges of doing it at home, is having a sufficient volume so that it can maintain temperature in, you know, say, cold weather environment. Because if your pile is, you know, only, you know, 3 feet by 3 feet,
it's going to be frozen.
Hard freeze, and you'll have a block of ice in the middle, and so it basically goes dormant for the season.
Will that kill it? Will it come back when it warms up again?
It will come back and start over again.
Okay.
So, you know, getting the right amount of volume, but again, you also want to make sure that you're turning it so that it's not just clumping up and freezing. So you might need to put a little extra work into it in the wintertime.
Okay. So some of the other things that you can do other than just putting it in pots or on your lawn. Actually, I was going to ask you this earlier. On the lawn side of things, do you just use that to patch certain areas of the lawn? Like, let's say you've got some compost now, or do you just sprinkle it over the whole lawn like fertilizer?
A lot of people do both, and that's what there's going to be a lot of focus on lawn care, especially this fall when people will be overseeding.
Right.
If you wanted to do the entire lawn, it's the sort of thing where you would mow the grass a lot lower than you normally would, and then aerate, and then spread a quarter of an inch to a half an inch of compost over the whole thing. You can very definitely overseed, say, bare patches or something like that if you're having trouble just in certain spots.
So doing that, I'm guessing it not only keeps the seeds that you just put down, it keeps them in place so they don't wash away, but it also feeds them.
Absolutely. The benefits of having the compost on the lawn are many. It's everything from erosion control to increasing soil porosity. You know, the four main constituents of soil are organic materials, living things, inerts, minerals, and air is one of those big things. And compost is really great for increasing the porosity of soil so that roots can grow vigorously in the directions that they want.
Now, somebody told me that you could add some to water if you're going out there and you're watering your potted plants and things like that. Does that actually help?
It could certainly expand sort of the reach and usability of a small amount of compost, and people would refer to that as making compost tea.
Oh, compost tea. I like it.
There you go.
Sounds delicious. Get me some of that.
Yeah, that would be a good thing that you could use as like a foliar spray, or just spread it out over, you know, a larger expanse. So
yeah.
People would do that in a situation where you had a little bit of compost, but you wanted to spread its usability.
But if you had enough, then you just put a little bit in the top of your potted plants so that when you do water it, it kind of seeps through it and down into the soil.
That is certainly one popular strategy.
I like it. And so I guess if you were doing this in an apartment or condo setting, that's when you'd look at the little tub, like the worm situation. Do you have to do the worms inside? Or
no, the worms are temperature sensitive, though. So if you would want to bring them inside, certainly on a hot summer day or a really cold day, you know, those little buddies will either dry out or freeze up fairly easily. They do also make certain home compost machines. I cannot attest to their
I haven't
functionality, seen but it, some of them are as small as, you know, about the size of a couple of shoe boxes, and it's more like an electric composter that will turn it. And
is it kind of like a microwave where you put your stuff in, wait 30 seconds, and you got compost?
Well, I don't know if it's 30 seconds. I think it's more like a couple of weeks, something like that. It's not something that I have very much experience with. I've just seen them.
That's interesting. I have not seen those. Well, you mentioned earlier that you can get some stuff from the Nashville Public Works. Where do people go to find that, and what is all available for people?
So Metro Public Works operates four drop-off sites for Davidson County residents, where if you didn't want to have a compost pile at your house, or your compost pile just isn't large enough to take all of your organics, you can bring your food scraps from your kitchen and drop those off at the Metro convenience centers.
Okay. But as far as like, you mentioned the cone that you can get for them. Are there other things that you can get to help do it at home for yourself?
Absolutely. They've got a great section on their website at nashville.gov. If you go into Public Works, they've got a section devoted to composting, which can lead you to all the resources that they have. And again,
and do they sell this stuff or is it free to the public?
The drop-off is free. That is a service of ours that Metro sponsors if you want to take it to a convenience center.
Okay.
And thankfully, we've got a lot of people who avail themselves of that. It's great. Right. Really warms the heart. But online, and if you want to do it at home, indeed. if you want to do it at home, you can buy at cost from Metro. So you can really save a lot by going through the city instead of, say, going over to, you know, Home Depot.
Just all your supplies.
They also have wonderful options there, too.
Nice. Nice. I love that. Well, listen, we need to take one more break, but we're going to come back with a whole lot more of Heino's Home Show. So come on back. All right, welcome back. Welcome back to Heino's Home Show. I always love the Ramones. That's them doing It's a Wonderful World, or What a Wonderful World. Great song by that Louis Armstrong did way back in the day. We are talking composting with the folks from The Compost Company. We got Jeff and Clay Ezell here with us. We, of course, are brought to you by Accurate Mortgage Group. You can find them at AccurateMTG.com or at HeinosHomeShow.com. Steve, you were talking during the break about something kind of interesting.
Yeah, so I went to Europe last year on my honeymoon, actually. And one of the things that I noticed that was very different compared to what you see in Nashville or surrounding counties as far as like public trash cans, there they have three different compartments on every single trash bin. Is part of that have to do with composting? Like, is that what they're trying to accomplish by having the different segments?
Definitely. And and that's a great observation. And we brushed briefly on, different regions of the world earlier that were kind of out ahead of us. And in Europe particularly, they've been doing this for a lot longer than we have. And so they are, offering people in public venues the opportunity to separate their waste into, generally speaking, organics, recyclables, and then, otherwise just trash. But they make every effort that they can to reduce the amount of material that is going strictly to trash.
That's cool, because the one thing that I did notice is it seemed very easy to do it. It didn't take a lot of effort on my part, and we obviously are not from Europe, so we just happened to notice it, and we were like, oh, this goes here, and it was really easy. So I thought that was a very cool thing.
I'm a little disturbed by that. You're on your honeymoon, and you're noticing trash cans. What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you?
In all fairness, it was our first trip to Europe, and we were trying to really take in the surroundings and kind of understand what it was like, and that, trash and that sort of thing is just a part of life.
Yeah, you're a real romantic. I like it. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So let's say you're really interested in the result of composting, but you just don't want to be bothered doing it yourself. Can you go buy some of this stuff?
Call the compost company.
Aha, that's where I was going with that. So what kind of stuff do you offer? I mean, what can people buy from you?
We make soil blends, a couple types of compost. We also make mulch and mulch blends.
Okay, so when you say blends, so when you just do the basic composting, it comes out as like pure, 100% compost material, and then you take that and blend it with what else?
We would blend that with topsoil.
Okay.
That we have gotten typically. We also use a lot of it for, we touched a little bit earlier on sort of land management with the landfills, but a lot of what we've been doing recently is helping with stormwater management. There are a lot of especially government organizations or contractors who are looking to manage rainfall and stormwater runoff, and compost is a really great additive for helping rainwater get back down into the native soils as opposed to flooding the streets and overrunning the stormwater drain systems.
Now, why is that? Like, how does compost help in that sense?
Well, compost will help increase soil porosity, and so the permeability of the soil is increased with compost use.
So it sinks into the ground rather than flowing over it down into the gutter.
Exactly right. And so once it goes down into the soil, not only do you help with erosion control, the compost will help with moisture retention later on, so your plants can be more drought tolerant. Okay. So in the case of a big commercial project, compost can help with lowering maintenance costs on down the line.
Got it.
So that's a big part of what we do.
Great. Well, listen, let's talk about one of your customers. It's a local business called Compost Nashville that I know you guys are associated with. And I read that they diverted more than 4 million pounds of compostable material from landfill since they started in 2014. That seems like the perfect answer to people who live in condos and apartments and that kind of thing, and they don't want to do the composting themselves. How did you get involved with them?
They are a pickup service, and we are a processor. And so when they grab that material, they bring it to us, and we process it.
Okay.
So we work very intimately with Compost Nashville, and we're really thrilled that they're out there doing it on the residential level. We both are attacking the problem on the commercial level, but they really, I think the majority of what they're doing, especially now with COVID and some closures in the hospitality industry, they're most of their fire is focused on homeowners now. And it's, you know, I think that they're up over 1,000 households in Nashville now. It may be 2,000. They've really seen a great uptick because people are getting more conscious every day about, you know, where their waste is going. And they're providing a really good service where they come drop you off a clean bucket. You fill it over the course of a week. They come in and switch it out with a clean one, and then we take care of all the dirty work.
Now, do the people who donate their waste, do they get any sort of soil in return? Like, do you drop off a bucket of dirt for them, too, at the same time? Or how does that work?
There is a compost give back twice a year in which about a 40-pound bag of our compost will come get dropped on your doorstep along with a clean bucket. It's a subscription service that they run. And it's, you know, we're seeing that there are more and more sustainability-minded Nashvillians all over the place.
So that in that way, they can kind of earn their own compost back by donating the waste that they have without having to actually do the composting themselves.
Correct. And, you know, in a perfect world, everybody would take care of their own, you know, waste material. But like you said, in apartments or restaurants and, you know, hotels and things don't really have that opportunity. And so we all exist to make that happen conveniently.
Simple. Easy peasy.
Yeah,
it is. Now, it just requires a little bit of habit change. It's scraping that plate at the end, you know, with those leftover asparagus or whatever your child or your, you know, picky eater in your family didn't eat, goes into that bucket instead of in the garbage can.
Well, how often do you have to sift through and get the incorrect things out of there?
It happens every day. There's lots of people involved in waste diversion, but we've got some processes built into our
Whose job is that to like dive into the pile and start sifting through it? And it's like, gosh darn it, a piece of steak.
That's kind of everybody. It takes a village. I'm doing it just as much as a lot of our guys are. You know, we try to get it out at every stage of the process, but a lot of it happens mechanically.
Oh, okay, good.
Oh, nice. Now, what about on the commercial side? So, let's say I owned a restaurant and I wanted to get involved in this. What would that process look like for me? You know, once I reach out to you guys and say, hey, I'm interested in doing this, how much effort does it take on my part? You know, is it difficult to get set up? What does that look like from a commercial standpoint?
We try to make that as painless as possible. Somebody from our team will come to you, sort of check out what your facility looks like, and we do a custom designed system for whatever your needs are. If you are a restaurant that is putting out, you know, 50 gallons a week, you know, you can get, you know, a small bin and we come by once a week and we take that off your hands. Or if you're somebody like, you know, say the Music City Center, our convention center in downtown, normal times, they're generating quite a bit. Or Vanderbilt University is another one of our clients. And so we've got 9 locations on their campus where we are picking up stuff on sort of a route basis. And anyway, so it's all tailored to whatever your needs are. And we try to make that super painless and also economical. That is a huge part of this, because we certainly don't want to penalize anybody for doing the right thing. We actually want to incentivize them by, you know, collecting it on, you know, at rates that are lower than trash. That is what we're building towards as we expand our fleet and our hauling options, is actually getting under what it costs just to throw it away, because I think people should be rewarded for going to that extra effort of separating the things.
Yeah. That's interesting you should say that, because in the neighborhood I live in, if you want to recycle, you got to pay extra for the recycling can. And a lot of people are like, well, I'm not paying extra just to recycle, when, you know, the other stuff gets hauled away for free. It's part of our HOA dues, you know?
Yeah.
So in that case, you get penalized for recycling. Whereas if it was just kind of put there, then it would, a lot of more people, I think, would do it.
Definitely. And, you know, I think that, there are some light barriers in recycling, and you know, of which, you know, composting is a form of recycling.
Sure.
Certainly the oldest form there is, the most natural. But generally speaking, if the demand is there, if the homeowners said that they really wanted that and that was a priority for them, I imagine that they would figure out a way to make that work for you.
Okay. We'll have to call the HOA board and see what we can do about that. you mentioned that you work a lot with big places like Music City Center. I would imagine that you can't pick up the same, be on the same schedule all the time, because they have an ebb and flow in what they do. If they have a big convention in town, obviously they're going to generate a lot more stuff, and then they might be dormant for a week or two, and then they have another convention. So how do you handle that when it's just kind of up and down all the time?
The scheduling is probably how I got this little twitch in my right eye. I generally handle it by being up till 2:30 in the morning and caffeine.
Okay.
And it's where, you know, our team is used to unique scheduling, because we also work with schools and things. So we have closures in certain seasons, and we've gotten pretty good at that.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of food waste at schools.
Those vegetables
never get eaten, do they?
There's very little waste on pizza day, but on vegetable lasagna day, it's incredible how much ends up in their trash can. We've done a lot of audits with Metro, and we're trying to figure that out. Hopefully down the line, we'll be able to make that a reality.
So in a way, you can actually help the school kitchen figure out what foods to make, because you're like, okay, look, Brussels sprouts, not so much. We had a big uptick in Brussels sprouts in our composting pile this week.
Mm-hmm. We try. They have some certain standards that they have to meet. Every day can't be, you know, chicken finger day. But they, so.
Much to my son's dismay, chicken fingers and macaroni and cheese. You know, if every meal could be that, he'd be happy.
Yeah, that sounds like every kid, I think.
Yeah, pretty much. So if people wanted to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
Our website is at compostcompany.com. We were happy to be able to jump on that one early. Yes, our name is exactly what we do. They can give us a call.
Compostcompany.com. Love it. And are you on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, all that kind of thing?
We are. We're on all of them. Some of them better than others. We spend a lot more time on Instagram and Facebook than some of the others. But the best way to get a hold of us is directly, info@compostcompany.com, or there's ways you can reach us through the website.
Awesome. Well, listen, Jeff and Clay Ezell of the Compost Company, thanks so much for joining us. You've really enlightened us here today. Hey, until we see you next week, check out Hino's Home Show at hinoshomeshow.com, and we'll see you then.
Accurate Mortgage Group, a division of Copia LLC, is an equal housing lender, NMLS 4664, and a Mueller, NMLS 1666140.